Okay, go ahead. You can start whenever you're ready.
Good morning, everybody. So why don't we call this meeting to order? And then Jamie, can you take roll?
Yes, I can take roll.
Thank you.
Commissioner Briceño, Commissioner Buck.
Here.
Commissioner Duran, Commissioner Faruqi, Commissioner Kent.
Here.
Commissioner Leach. I see you. Commissioner Leach, I think you're frozen.
My apologies, here.
There you are. Commissioner Lee, Commissioner Matsuba, Commissioner O'Neill, who I see. And Commissioner Steinberg.
Yeah, present. My video was off.
Present.
All right. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We are one short of a quorum.
Okay, good to know. So why don't we actually just open up for our reflection with Rabbi Rick, please?
Good morning, everybody. Just a point of personal privilege before I do give the quote. I just want to thank all the commissioners who came to the Driving Out Darkness program at UCI last week. There were more than 300 people there, more than 80% of them not Jewish, which is exactly what we were going for, to teach people about anti-Semitism in Orange County and across the nation. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. I really appreciate it. Now, since we have our faith officer here from the Sheriff's Department, I thought I would take a passage from the Hebrew Bible that often gets overlooked, but it's one of my favorite passages in the whole text of the Bible. I'll do it in Hebrew for you first, so I can show off. It goes like this: Lo tuchal lehitalem, and it says you must not remain indifferent. You must not remain indifferent. This is about all sorts of things. In particular, in this passage, it's about if you see something that's lost, you have to hold it until its true owner comes back, and then you have an obligation to give it back. But it applies to everything we think about when we think about the work that we do here at the Orange County Human Relations Commission. It is the essence of being an involved citizen, saying we are not going to look away. We're going to shine light on dark places, and we will not remain indifferent. In fact, we will change things so that they are different. And so it's in that spirit I like to begin our meeting.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Rick. And I have to say, I heard some amazing feedback regarding that conference that you guys had from all over, from all levels. And I just have to say, really great job.
Thank you so much. It was a lot of work, and I'm glad it's over, but glad we did it. And we're really working on a continuation of this kind of thing in many different venues. So keep your eyes open. Thank you again, Vice Chair.
Thank you. Okay, so let's move on to the monthly summary of commission activities. Norma, can you help us with that, please?
Absolutely. Good morning, everybody. If you go to your page 5 and 6, you'll see this month's month activities or last month's. And there's just a couple things I'd like to highlight. Is one, our Hate Hurts Us All campaign was featured at the US Open in Huntington Beach in August. So they printed posters, flyers, and had them in different settings throughout the event, which was really, really cool. So that was exciting. And if you go to page 6, you start seeing that our numbers around hate reports are a little bit higher than they've been in the past, but I will attribute this to the fact that now we officially have launched and have been hard at work in promoting our new reporting platform with 211OC. And next month, you will see a more in-depth report around the different, the breakdown of the reports that we're getting, the types of reports that we're getting. And it's really gonna be tied to the 211 reporting and this campaign. So Charitable Ventures is helping us put the data together, and we will have something that's a little bit more descriptive than this to just give you a sense of how much this was needed in the community and how it needs to continue to be supported and even expanded, right? I think that this is just the first step and phase in the work of anti-hate. So we're looking at response, but then there's so much that to be done in the prevention side. So we will bring that up next month, and I'll put it in my update so we can have a little bit more time to really review what that data means and what it says. That's all.
Thanks, Norma. So moving on to the next is open forum. Jamie?
Yeah, if anybody wishes to speak, if you can hit *9 on your phone or the hand raise icon on the Zoom app, and we do have one attendee and she does wish to speak. It is Felicity Figueroa. Go ahead, Felicity.
Thanks so much, Jamie. And sorry, you always have to hear my voice at the beginning of these meetings. I just want to say that I'm very glad I was unable to go to the Driving Out Darkness, but I was very happy to hear that it was such a success. We all realize what a huge problem anti-Semitism is, not only here in our community, but around the country, around the world. But I also want to say I am very glad that when it was discerned that the Clarion Group was one of the speakers, the Clarion Group has been designated a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center for being Islamophobic. And I was very impressed with the rapid way that was dealt with, and they were removed from the speaker lineup, because we always want to make sure that we're not replacing one kind of hate with another. I mean, hate free means hate free for everyone. I also just wanted to bring up, there was a recent article from BuzzFeed about Oath Keeper membership that included a lot of people both in law enforcement departments and political office and candidates. And it just made me realize that I hope that there's a mechanism within both the Sheriff's Department and in our local law enforcement to make sure that members of these kind of hate groups are not part of the law enforcement bodies that we have here in our community. And I was reminded of when someone was, one of the sheriff's deputies was determined to have a 3%er badge on his uniform during a Black Lives Matter protest. And a lot of people were not really happy with the response. It appeared that that deputy just got a slap on the wrist, in spite of the fact that numerous groups, including 100 Black men of Orange County, asked that more be done. So I just hope there's a system and a mechanism in place to deal with any of these incidents in the future. I also wanted to just comment on a piece of legislation, which is, I don't know what's gonna happen with it, but it was a bill to separate the sheriffs and coroners here in the state. I know out of 58 counties, 48 of them have the sheriff and the coroner being the same person. But a lot of us feel that can be very dangerous when, not only when, you know, a resident's death is caused by the sheriff's department or, but in any matters when the sheriff can overrule even what the medical examiner says. So I just think it's important matter that our Board of Supervisors should be aware of, because counties can change this. You don't have to wait for a state law in order to change that and create an independent coroner's office. And just the last thing I wanted to say is that I hope that, I know the Office of Independent Review is still empty. I mean, the director of it, we were so sad when Sergio Perez left. He was so accessible to the community and had great lines of communication with so many different groups within our county. And we're just hoping that whoever fills his shoes, which are big shoes indeed, will be able to rise to that that level of integrity and independence. So thank you very much and have a good month.
Yeah.
Thank you, Felicity. And I have to say, I always welcome and appreciate your information. You always bring us such information that I have to admit, I'm not aware of. And afterwards, I go and look it up. And I'm always much more well-informed afterwards. Anybody else have feedback regarding Felicity's comments this morning? Okay. So we'll move on to the next item, actually. We're very excited to have Kathleen here this morning as our speaker. Dot, could you take it?
Madam Vice Chair, do you want me to read the title?
Sure. Yes, please.
Yeah, okay. So item number four is Welcoming and Safe. What does safety feel and look like? From Faith Liaison Officer, Orange County Intelligence Assessment Center at the Orange County Sheriff's Department.
Thank you.
Well, there's a head start on my introduction right there. I won't take up a lot of time, but I will say that I have had the pleasure of knowing Kathleen for really only a short time, but a meaningful time. We have actually come together more on the basis of interfaith work, some of it having to do with some hate incidents and crimes. I'll let her delve into that. But as the senior chaplain for the Sheriff's Department and her work with OCAIC, she has coordinated some wonderful workshops. I've had the pleasure of sitting in on at least two of them. One where at the end, she brought in the pastor from Geneva Presbyterian Church and he spoke. And I have to tell you that everyone on that Zoom meeting literally gasp because one, it was such a surprise to see him, but to feel what he said and to see the pain that he had gone through, not only on his own behalf, but on behalf of his congregation. And Kathleen brought all of this to us and it was monumental. I also had the pleasure on Tuesday afternoon of having her sit to my left side at the Driving Out Darkness Summit. So with all the things she does, she still makes time for all these very relevant events that we too are involved with. So without further ado, please meet my friend and the friend to Orange County, Kathleen Quinman.
Thank you so much, Todd, for that introduction. And I hope that, you know, I make more friendships today with this presentation and also with the work that I'm doing. I did prepare a slide presentation, if that's of interest to the commission. I wanted to explain a little bit what the Fusion Center is, what the Orange County Intelligence Assessment Center is and what it does, and then what my role in that is. And if that's okay, I did time it. So I make sure I am respectful of everybody's time, but I'll go ahead and share my screen if that's okay. Is that good? All right, here we go. Okay, where'd you go? Hold on, everybody. All right, so I have there, okay. Now let me see, are you seeing it yet? Probably not. Hold on, let me share again, show all windows. There we go. Nope.
Do you need to co-host?
Do I need permission? Because are you seeing my screen at all?
You have
You're
permission.
A panelist, you should be able to.
All right, so share. Let me see if that's happening. Wow, I have not had trouble with that before. Excuse me for 1 second.
Would you like to email it to me? Maybe I can try.
This is
Norma.
I know. Hi, Norma. That's odd. Save. Okay. Let me just open it. Hold on 1 second. I'll open it again. Let's see. it's open. I reopened it, so you should be able to see it if I share. So let me go back to you guys. Are you seeing my screen at all right now? By the way, hello?
No, we can't see anything. Yeah.
No. Oh, this is so frustrating. I'm so sorry. All right, I apologize. I'm working hard to get this done. Do you want to go on to the next agenda item and while I work this out?
Jamie, can we do that?
Yeah, we can. Yeah, we can just go back. But item number five, you can't vote on it because
I know. I just read that too.
Yeah, so if you want, we can go to item six.
We could go to item six, but Norma, can you take item six? It's to discuss the 75th year independence celebration of India in Orange County that resulted in hate speech and protests.
So this, actually this agenda item is Commissioner Faruqi's item.
Right.
I don't have full information, so I don't feel comfortable taking on the agenda item.
Okay, that's understandable.
Background. Sorry about
and
that.
And then I think we're going to skip number seven as well, right? Chair to assign commissioners to Communication Standing Committee.
Yeah, yes. Chairwoman, Chairperson Matsuba isn't here to do that.
Okay, we're going to have a really efficient meeting today. Are you back?
Item eight?
No,
okay, that's okay.
Okay.
Take your time.
All right.
Okay, so then let's go down the item again. Informational items, commission staff reports. So we have the first one: update on "Hate Hurts Us All" campaign.
Oh,
are we here?
Oh, I think we're seeing your screen now.
I think you are. I'm so sorry. Can you see that? Do you see the PowerPoint?
Yes.
Okay. Do you see something?
It's zoomed in.
Yeah.
All right. Do you see it as a slideshow?
Partial, because it's very zoomed in.
That is just so bizarre. Okay. Let me go. All right. Go ahead. Looks like I'm still.
Okay. Sure. Okay. So why don't we go back to item eight, update on Hate Hurts Us All campaign from our staff. Norma, would that be you or? Would it be Gingrich? Sarah?
Hi, sorry. My internet just shut down on me.
Okay.
All right, so, the update for Hate Hurts Us All, I did a little bit at the beginning.
Yeah.
We are actually doing a social media post right now with Imprenta. So if you please follow OC Humanations Council on Facebook, Instagram, you'll see some of the posts that they're doing around data, hate incident data in the county, and just really cool stuff. Also promoting next week's report release event. So if you're able to share retweets, whatever the the social media stuff is, that'd be great because it really is about expanding and sharing the information widely. And as I mentioned earlier, we will have a full report on website visits and some of the data that we're receiving from the actual new reporting database platform, plus also with now launching the social media outreach, we should have some data around that as well in that report next month. But right now we're really focusing on building the momentum for next week's event, which was really helpful. And as of, I think the county sent out a media alert a couple of days back, and I've already started getting media requests for interviews and information. So from here till next week, we'll be very, very busy. Exciting times.
This is very exciting. Thanks, Norma. So I can see, Kathleen, do you think you're ready?
I am ready. Thank you so much. Okay. Thank you so much for your patience. And I would have stopped while you were talking, but I was scared. I don't want to do that. So I'll start right now. So I'm going to just talk a little bit about the Orange County Intelligence Assessment Center and what it does, and then right into the faith outreach and how this connects to what's close to all of our hearts, which is anti-hate. So fusion centers were established by executive order of the president after 9/11. And the whole purpose was to get agencies together in one hub to share information so that they can, it would maximize their ability, as it says right there in their mission, to detect, prevent, and investigate and respond to criminal and terrorist activity. So the fusion center is not an investigative body. It is an information sharing hub. So that's the best way to kind of look at it. There are about 80 fusion centers across the nation. And this is just a picture of the United States and all the places they are. Some fusion centers like Orange County handle a very small section because it's very dense. And then others have an entire state. Here's the California fusion centers. They're all over and you can see the little orange there. That's us and the Okayak. And these are some of the participating agencies in Orange County that participate within the Orange County Assessment Center. And these are the agencies, federal, state, local, that share information with each other. So the faith-based outreach program was designed to reach out into our community and begin the work of creating safety and security for our houses of worship that exist in Orange County. The Department of Homeland Security wanted to see the entire nation begin this two-way communication with our faith community and all of the agencies that are mentioned there and that we saw. So federal, state, and local partners. And I know, Chief Kent, you're here. You can jump in anytime because I know your agency works with the OKAIC as well. And so for our faith outreach program, we wanted to establish houses of worship, security meetings, and working groups so that number one, we could begin to give information to them that we were getting from the Department of Homeland Security. We also wanted to do physical security assessments, vulnerability assessments of their buildings and locations. And we wanted to have these working groups begin to know each other, because building a safety net in Orange County would mean that we all need to know each other and work together. And that's true for the faith community as well. We wanted to engage with existing groups and functioning groups that are already working towards this. And we resourced these working groups with FBI, DHS, local law enforcement, and fire. And we provide collaborative trainings and briefings along with our federal, state, and local partners. And that can be either in person, on Zoom, or an email. So the suite of services that we actually have that we can deliver from the OKAIC within the Faith Outreach Program are vulnerability assessments, which I mentioned earlier, which is a house of worship. They're meeting in a certain location. So deputies will come out, or Department of Homeland Security will come out on site and walk through the building and walk through the campus and walk through the school if there is one, and then produce a written product that says you have some vulnerabilities in these areas. You know, for example, you need more lighting in your parking lot if you're meeting at night. And this is for the safety of the congregants and the house of worship participants. Or you need fencing around the school. That would be a good protective measure. Or you should have an alarm system. And so these things are in a written product. And then DHS and FEMA have grants that they give to funding, they give to nonprofits and houses of worship to actually purchase those items that were discussed in the assessment. So they will buy, they will fund at a cost reimbursement grant, they will fund those things that I mentioned. We also, if a house of worship has a school attached to it, we want to connect them with our school mobile resource assessment team, which is really an interagency team, and it also has behavioral health as part of that team. And the reason behavioral health is there, and this is exciting for law enforcement, is that sometimes if there is a child who has maybe expressed some things that are concerning on social media, then, you know, maybe it doesn't need lights and sirens and police cars showing up on campus to talk to this person. It's a different approach. There is behavioral health works with school administrators and parents and the child to find out exactly what's happening, you know, and if that child needs help, to secure that help for that child in that school. We like to not only have and host community and interagency events, but we like to go to them if a house of worship does host that. For example, Core AME Church in Irvine hosted the FBI and had an event that was open to all the entire faith community. So we attended that and participated in that as well. We provide the security briefings and trainings to the faith community, and those actually originate with the Department of Homeland Security. So basically we get the information, we share the information, again, an information hub. And then we participate in community meetings and sit on committees, House of Worship, Faith, so that we can discuss the concerns that they might have, so that we are listening as well as providing information. We're also gaining information from them as to what their concerns are. And this is important to the resiliency cycle. And I put this on there because this is what we thought it would look like. And in the beginning, it did. We reached across the entire faith divide. And this is how we thought the resiliency communication cycle would always be, but it wasn't. So it starts with contact and putting all the agencies. I always give people information and telephone numbers for their contacts in our federal and state and local organizations, but also for the collaborative trainings and the multi-engagement working groups. Now that this is, I began working for the OCAIC in 2016. I've been with the Sheriff's Department since 1999. And so this communication cycle actually goes from all these different places. Contact could go right there, feedback could go right there, this, that. So it's kind of cross dialogue, and it's like a fusion ball of communication, which we're very happy with, actually. So here's the slide I want to spend a little bit of time on. We've learned a lot of things, you know, by first one-on-one communicating or contacting and engaging with our houses of worship in Orange County, and then to the umbrella organizations like the interfaith groups, which is just wonderful, a connection to make in our efforts to be safe and secure and to make sure that our faith community feels that way too. But we were looking at the need to report hate crimes and hate incidents. Are we underreporting? I'm not qualified to say that, but I do hear of hate incidents and hate crimes, especially when houses of worship are trying to apply for funding from the nonprofit security grant. And what is important about that, and we need to educate the faith community on what are hate crimes, what are hate incidences, but we also need to connect the dots with the incidences and educate our houses of worship on, let's just say there's a house of worship and last week somebody was yelling and screaming and maybe it was racial slurs or some other type of language. Initially, that's a hate incident, right? It's not actually maybe a hate crime, but what if that happens every single week? And what if that same thing is escalating? For example, there's more people in the car that are driving by saying that, and the threat becomes more obvious and more concerning. So we want to be educating the faith community to report that, you know, just report it. It can be reported to local law enforcement. Always, we want them to do that. It also can be reported to the OCAIC on our website where it asks for a suspicious activity report. That activity is suspicious, you know? And so if those dots can be connected, that's the job of our analysts to put those things together. The importance is not only for the analyst and then law enforcement to look at, is this incident escalating? is this particular house of worship being, you know, a targeted day after day, week after week, month after month. The analysts also have access to information on what's happening maybe in other houses of worship. So let's say, you know, this drive-by, we'll use that as an example, is happening with, you know, slurs and, you know, hate language. Okay. And it's happening, say, in Laguna Beach. If that house of worship will report and continually report that, then the analysts may also get a report from the city of Orange for a house of worship there. And maybe it's the same messaging. Maybe it's the same thing that's happening, the same car, the same, you know, the suspects are the same, you know, in that if they connect the dots, even between cities, then we're looking at a pattern. And that's what we would like to see. You know, if that's happening, we want to know about that. Law enforcement wants to know about that. The OCAIC wants to know about it because we want to share that information with local law enforcement. And then we also have to be very sensitive to the cultural differences in response to hate. And by that, I don't always mean or necessarily mean racial or ethnic cultural differences, but faith cultural differences. And for example, our Jewish community, they're very far along in their response to being secure, safe and secure. On the security continuum, they're very attuned to things that may happen. So if there is an anti-Semitic messaging or a graffiti, they're going to respond to that. They're going to report that. Okay, but if we look then at, say, the Catholic Church, they might just erase it and just clean it off. And what we would like to know, and I know law enforcement would like to know as well, and fire would like to know, especially if arson's involved, even if it's a small fire, what is the message? What did the message say? You know, that might become meaningful in a larger picture. More than one house of worship may have had the same messaging. So if it just gets cleaned up repeatedly, we won't know. And so this is all part of our relationship building and education and dialogue that we have begun to open up with the faith community. And also, I want to mention that some houses of worship are sanctuary houses of worship. And for that reason, they may want to protect their community in a different way. And then they may not want to report, say, messaging, graffiti, drive-by things, incidents. What we want the community to know and what we are telling them is we are not responding to anything more than the messaging. You know, their community that they're protecting, we acknowledge and respect that. And so that's going to take relationship building, and we are committed to that in our faith outreach. And so we're really very, very happy to join with the OC Human Relations Commission on their work on anti-hate. We want to be a part of that. Maybe we can close a service gap of some kind. We'd like to have a seat at the table at committees and meetings so that we can add whatever we have to add, you know, and maybe it's a small role. I don't know, but we are grateful to join hands with everyone who is working towards that anti-hate message and anti-hate community, you know, to continue our work, which is to build a safe, secure, and resilient homeland. So safety and security at the heart of everything we do, and anti-hate messaging definitely is part of what we want to do in our community. So I hope I haven't taken too much time, but maybe I let you know a little bit about what we're doing. And I so appreciate the opportunity. I really do. And here is this is my information. I am the chief chaplain for the Orange County Sheriff's Department as well. And you can call me anytime. I would use, if I were you, if you want to talk to me, I would use the bottom number. That's my personal cell. This one, it's always with me, and you will always get me. So again, I want to thank you for your time and for hearing about our program. I can answer any questions too, if you want.
Kathleen, I wonder, without revealing anything that you can't reveal, obviously, if you would mind sharing the story. I mean, what you have given us is what ifs, and hypothetical situations. I wonder if you would mind sharing with the commission the real story of what happened in July with the young man and the bolo and the mosque in Garden Grove, because I think we all need to hear how close some of this is in our neighborhoods and the reality of how not only reporting this to the Sheriff's Department or to OCAIAC or whatever, but how we can work amongst ourselves and pick up the phone and call our different contacts, whether they be interfaith or human relations, and say, please get the word out about this. Do you mind sharing that story?
I think for that story, we sent the bolo out. That came from the Sheriff's Department and Department of Homeland Security directly, and I shared it with all of you. That particular story might not be as clear as another one that I have that might be even better to share. One of our houses of worship, they're very well represented in Orange County. I just won't say who they are, but they had a rock thrown at their glass. So the glass door was broken and a window was broken, and it was right off the side street where people can walk by. Then that was repaired. So they reported that was repaired. A little while later, maybe it was a month and a half, it happened again. And so they had to replace it again. And so all of these were reported to local law enforcement and to the OCAIAC. Okay, then they had an incident where there was a drone during their service that flew directly over their gathering and was there for quite a while. So then they had maybe a month before the drone, they had a bomb threat, which turned out to be nothing. But so this is what I'm talking about in connecting the dots. First, there was the rock, then a second rock breaking the glass. Then there was a bomb scare that turned out to be not credible. Then there was a drone that hovered over them. So maybe, and the drone didn't do anything. It didn't hurt anybody. It didn't fly so low that it scared everybody, but it was very concerning to the leadership of the House of Worship. So when each one of those were reported, but reported as a single incident. And so connecting the dots on that, it could appear that there may be an escalated target. They may be targeted, the rocks, the bomb scare, even though it was not credible, and then the drone. So because they had them and the officers who took the reports had reported it to the OCAIAC, OCAIAC analysts were able to connect the dots and then open up an investigation on that particular house of worship. And so that's what I'm talking about in connecting the dots. But it isn't always on law enforcement to connect the dots, because they may not connect the dots because of the way it's being reported as well. So education has to be full circle with everybody. So the house of worship needs, this particular house of worship did know to connect the dots and then repeat the prior incident eventually, but at first they didn't do that. So once they did, the dots were connected. And that's what, you know, we want to do in our faith outreach, is to make sure that the organizations know that they can look at this as well, you know, and what they rub up against is being welcoming and being safe. So if you over-report, you know, they may feel like that's over-reporting at first. And if they over-report, then are they still a welcoming environment for the entire community? It's extremely important for ecclesiastical leaders to make that balance. And for each particular faith, that's going to look a little bit different. And so, but that's one example of how the dots were connected. And that's what we want to do. We want to give that information out so they can make that determination. And so the officers are getting the information on site when they're reporting. They're understanding that this has been ongoing. And so, you know, otherwise it's just another report. Chief Kent, do you agree with that?
I think so. I think it's pretty accurate. You know, for us, I think what's really important is not necessarily holding back or not be at the mentality of, I don't want to necessarily bother the police or engage with the police, but it's really important to, however minute the incident might be, is to definitely make sure that we're aware, because the different types of trends that are going on across the county, the state, or the country, we want to be able to tie in all those different trends, and they might be connected in so many different ways. So yes, I would definitely agree.
Thank you, sir. So you can see, and this is very helpful, because you can see how in wanting to bring that safety and security, it has so many different layers and levels. And for a house of worship, I'll just give you one other example of a vulnerability that a house of worship might have. They want to be open to the community, of course, because that they're a very integral part to our peace, you know, and building love and relationships in Orange County and beyond. If a house of worship is renting their facility to another group, that presents another layer of vulnerability. And we saw that at Geneva Presbyterian, right? Because it was a Taiwanese group that was meeting in that lunch area. So it's important that when we do a physical assessment of the organization, we ask, is anybody else meeting here? Who has the code to your alarm system? You know, who else has a key? Because those present other vulnerabilities that you want to be aware of. And in asking those questions and opening up that dialogue, it does help our houses of worship to understand where they might be vulnerable. Oh, I didn't think of that. Okay, good. Well, now you're thinking of it. That's great. And we continue to partner with all of our houses of worship. And it's a big job, but I'll tell you, even though I am the faith liaison officer, I don't do this job alone. Everybody in law enforcement and fire and Department of Homeland Security and our faith organizations are all speaking and talking together and working towards this safety. And so that's why the relationship building is extremely important. Is that a good example, Dot? Is that what you were kind of looking
for? Yes, thank you. We sometimes need it to just come home to us. And thank you for sharing that.
Okay. Anybody else? Any questions or comments?
This is Jennifer. I noticed that the participating agencies, while I think it's great who I saw on there, is there a reason why perhaps not all the, you know, like the police departments are on there? Or
that's a great question. My slide wasn't big enough to include everybody. Okay. So that's the only reason. I should have said this is a sample of the agencies that are participating. So actually all of the cities in Orange County are participating, all 13 cities in the sheriff's area of responsibility and the unincorporated, they're participating. So yes, so they're all in there. I just didn't have enough room to put them all on. That's all. Okay. But that's a great question.
Okay, I'm relieved to hear that. I mean, I see Irvine where I do live, which is great, Chief Kent, but I'm also concerned about the other cities. Thank you.
Irvine also has its own intelligence unit. So that's important to know. So when we get any information or any questions, or if we get a report from Irvine, we send it right to them and we tell our houses of worship. If you're in Irvine, they have their own intelligence unit and they take that report. They're very, you know, and in fact, I shouldn't be talking about it. I should turn it over to Chief Kent.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's one thing that we actually created and developed throughout the years, because we initially had a couple of two, three detectives that had several different collaterals on their plates. You know, maybe they were investigating property crime, but at the same time, they would do intel type of investigative work that you know, stemmed from obviously hate or other issues that led into the world of intelligence. So what we did is we formalized it a few years back, and it's been super successful. And as a result of that, we just continued expanding on it. And just giving an example, we created this group. It's called the Interfaith Security Partnership Group. And all the different faiths that are represented within our city have obviously some sort of a security system or security personnel that run their, that oversee the churches, temples, campuses, whatever it may be. And they're connected and they're part of this group. So they do meet quarterly, I believe. Of course, there's an email communication that is very regular, but physical in-person meetings do occur quarterly, and that's our opportunity to provide training for them about latest trends, what's happening, what to look out for, how to report it. This core group of Intel officers do work very close and in partnership, not just with OCAIAC, but the JTTF as well, with the FBI and some of the other entities, but more importantly, with other agencies that are surrounding us. So the Sheriff's Department, Newport Beach, Tustin, whoever else, it's in our general facility, because what happens here definitely happens in other cities. Hate doesn't see boundaries or borders or, city limits or whatever it is. It's spread out. So for us to be able to work collaboratively with other agencies is absolutely crucial. But yes, expand a little bit on what you said, Kathleen, yes, that's definitely something we do have. It's been working great, and we're looking to always expand and add on to that.
Thank you, sir. And also, I just joined their group because they had best practices, and I want to be able to replicate some of that in the other cities. So I just joined with their Sergeant Tunnicliff there and Rick Raymer. And I'm just really appreciative that I get their information now too. And that's what it is about information sharing. This is something I can learn from them, because they have gone one step further, and we can bring that maybe into other areas. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other questions for me? All right, well, thank you so much. I appreciate being invited here to share.
Thank you so much, Kathleen. And actually, if you don't mind, Norma, can you help us? Can we take a group photo?
Yeah, all right. So everybody brush your hair, everybody's ready. Turn on your cameras while we wait. There he is, the life of the party. All right, ready? 1, 2, 3. Wait, hold on. Rabbi Steinberg's face was like, what? Okay, 1, 2, 3. Yay! Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you.
And you're welcome to stay if you have that time, so we can couple Thank more you. Things on our agenda. So why don't we hop back to item number 8, the second half. Well, actually, the second half, Norma, you already spoke on that, right?
No.
No, not yet? Okay. So the 2021.
You might have heard through the multiple emails I've sent.
Yes. Okay. So the 2021 hate crimes report release event.
All right. So I'm going to pop quiz people here. Let's see, when is, look at Thought's face. Next Thursday, we are launching, or we're releasing our 2021 hate crimes report. It's going to be a webinar. So please, I will send another invite again after this to folks to share. We are upwards in the 190s right now in terms of registration, which is huge. And I want to thank first and foremost my team, who has been hard at work in making sure to get those numbers there. Sarah has put in a lot of work and time in the report, making sure that the presentation is going to be what it needs to be, with the right speakers working on the event. Ginrich, Lionel, Jesus, Maureen, we've had this whole entire team really strategizing and doing targeted outreach to ensure that we get the people there. Because it's, about really getting the data, but then what do we do afterwards? So we're really excited. If you have not registered, please register, please be there. It will be recorded. So for folks who might not be able to be there, we will be sending out a link after, probably the week after the event. So I just want to make that final push. And Chief Kent will be one of our panelists, expert panelists. So You don't want to miss that, right? You don't want to let them down. So be there or be square. Thank you.
That's a good sell. We don't want to be square. Okay, so then let's go to item number 9, Chief Kent. Update from OC Chiefs and Sheriff.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Be there or be square. That makes me sound like I'm a mean person. I'm not. I'm a very nice guy. I just want to, before I get into that, I just want to make a comment about what was mentioned earlier by one of the callers or the caller earlier, as far as the type of process that's in place for the different law enforcement agencies, especially out here in Orange County. I can tell you the practice of hiring folks, at least out here, is very similar. And it is a pretty extensive process, where the application comes in and looking at the different qualifications, the minimum qualifications that are there for that person. And then going into the interview process, a written test, and then there's a pre-polygraph, what we call a pre-polygraph portion of the interview, where they fill out approximately 400 and something, just under 500 questions about pretty much everything. And then see if what kind of disqualifications are there. They go into a polygraph, which is the lie detector portion of things. And then they go into a background investigation, a pretty extensive investigation in their background and everything that they're a part of. And then from there, they have, for us, at least the way we have it structured here in Irvine, once you complete all that, and let's say you do pass all that, then you have a chief's interview. So this is my opportunity to sit down with a candidate and ask some really tough questions about, let's say it's a recruit or whether it's a lateral from another agency. Tell me about yourself. Yes, I read your background, but I want to hear it directly from you. You know, I want to see how sincere, how genuine it is. How are they? You know, do I picture them in an Irvine police uniform being out there, being a representative of not just the Irvine Police Department, but more importantly, a representative of the profession? After that, I do ask some of the tougher questions of, okay, like why Irvine? What do you bring to Irvine? Why should I give you a chance? So, well, I know a lot of agencies have a similar practice, a similar interview that's in place. After that, they go into a psychological evaluation and a medical evaluation. And then once all is well, then they're brought on. Now, of course, could a person be at their best from the word go all the way through that? Yes, there's only so much that we can catch. Are there bad apples that make it through the process from time to time? Yes, but we do, but it's about what systems do you have in place to be able to identify this after all that? Let's say this person has some issues, but it's just never discoverable because it was never brought forward for whatever reason. They've flown under the radar, let's just say. But there are places of place, and it's all about what actions you take once an issue is discovered. Do you turn a blind eye to it? Do you take corrective measures? What do those corrective measures look like? Is it appropriate? Is it legal? Is it what the law obligates you to do, or are you cutting corners? And more importantly, it doesn't need to be myself or anybody from management or supervision that brings an issue forward. Is empowering those that work with a person like that to come forward and bring up the issue. I saw this, I heard this, whatever it may be. And for us to be able to take obviously appropriate action and move forward. So I just wanted to quickly talk about that. And then as far as updates from the Orange County Chiefs and Sheriff Association. No major updates, but I do want to share that UCI has a new dean in their School of Social Ecology. His name is John Gould, and he just moved to Orange County from the DC area. Amazing man. He oversees our criminology. This is the UCI. I mean, because I'm still, I'm a proud alumni. There you go, Amy. He oversees the Criminology Law and Society program over there, and we had a great discussion, and I do plan on bringing him over to the Orange County Chiefs and Sheriff Association to introduce himself, and because I do think there's a lot of value in that program, having gone through it myself, the master's degree. Again, even if it's just a bachelor's degree, I think this is something that officers should go through. Everything we learn as police officer, I think, is very one-dimensional, because you're going through the academy, you're taught, you know, tactics, laws, how to write report, how to make arrests, how to this, how to testify in court, whatever it is. But I think the value that this program brings forward is all the whys, right? As a law enforcement officer, you're taught what to look for, how to respond, how to handle, how to this, how to that. But this program offers you the why. Why did your path as a police officer or a sheriff deputy cross with this person on that day at that time? And it's really interesting to get that perspective of things, and especially how our criminal justice system is here, not just in a state, but in a country. Is it great? I think there are gaps. I think there's areas of improvement. Is it the worst that's out there? Absolutely not. There, you look at some of the other countries throughout the world and in their justice system or lack thereof and how that's impacted. But you also look at the countries that are doing it better than we're doing it. So I think that's why it's really important in my position as chief to be able to bring folks from the academic world like Dean Gould into the Orange County Sheriff's Association to be able to, again, as much as we can collaborate and partner the academic world with the profession, I think it can only benefit us moving forward, especially with some of the challenges that the profession has faced throughout the decades, not just in recent years, just throughout the decades. This is a job that continues to evolve. It has evolved from day one in the 1800s. What they did back then is completely different than we do today, and what's going to happen in 10, 15, 20, 50 years from now. So, but it takes people's actions to implement change and influence change. So that's where I think it's important that we continue doing that, especially us in a leadership position. So with that, that's all I have, Vice Chair. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Chief Kent. So let's go to next item 10, OCSD Interfaith Council update from Rabbi Rick.
But you have me. So okay. Rabbi Steinberg's internet went kaput, but he wanted me to just show that he did not have a report, but he didn't want to leave people with the impression that he wasn't aware of that. So no meeting, no report.
Oops. So we're down to number 11, announcements from commissioners. Do we have anything? So I'll make the announcement then. So the agency that I work for, actually, we were fortunate enough this past week to receive a proclamation from the city of Santa Ana for Moon Festival, Mid-Autumn Festival, which is being celebrated this Saturday. And I know there's so many organizations, so many cities, this time around, which I love to see, celebrating this very meaningful holiday, in which it's pretty much our Thanksgiving. We have like our moon cakes, which is kind of equivalent to like the pumpkin pie. You can't have Thanksgiving without pumpkin pie. Well, you can't have moon cakes without a moon festival without moon cakes. So I know that this Friday in Irvine, they're having their mid-autumn, and Saturday, I know that District 1 with Supervisor Doe at Moscow Park, they're having theirs. For Santa Ana this year in particular, it's very meaningful for me. Our agency, when we heard about the apology for Chinatown, we did follow up with a letter and encouragement of, you know, recognizing the step that they were taking towards healing. And then after the apology, actually, we followed up with another letter of request in terms of, hey, what about some cultural investment? Because your budget reflects your priority. And City Council approved it. It actually is part of their general budget. So that means now and forever, City of Santa Ana will celebrate the Mid-Autumn Festival. And it's scheduled for the last Saturday of September or the first Saturday of October. And so this year, the Mid-Autumn Festival will be celebrated on October 1st. And I definitely want to extend this invitation to everybody here. And I'll email the invitation. I think it's almost there. The city's working on that. But I wanted to share this with you because it really is just so meaningful, and it just shows that we're moving along. And I truly believe budget shows priority. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so I guess I'm the only announcement. Jamie, can I adjourn the meeting?
You can. Yeah, we do still not have a quorum, but I will tell you that the 30 days from the last time you guys approved the AB 361 will be up over the weekend. So if you do not meet tomorrow, your October meeting will have to be in person.
So we better meet tomorrow, B square, right, Norma?
Yes.
Okay.
Is there a specific time, Jamie, the meeting should happen?
Whenever we can get seven of them, doesn't matter to me.
Oh, okay, that'll be fun. Who commits to tomorrow? Who's already here? So I don't have to call you.
It just depends on the time, Norma.
Is there a specific time that works for you?
I can do 11. Sorry to be limited, but my day's really booked tomorrow.
Let's see. Anybody else have a time preference?
No, I'm going to put 11 right now.
I will too. I'll put 11 down.
Okay.
Way to go, Amy.
Let's see. We lost Rabbi Steinberg.
Yeah.
We have four.
Yes. Commissioner O'Neill.
She is still here, but you're on mute.
I'm good for 11, Norma.
Okay, Chief, thank you. Okay, so then let me start working on this and see who else I can get, and I will keep everybody posted. Thanks, Kathleen, for coming.
Thank you so much, Kathleen. I learned a lot.
Thank you so much for having me. And you have my phone number. Any questions later, just give me a call. I'm happy to talk with you or meet with you. And anyway, God bless. And thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
One more thing, Norma, I apologize. I think Renee for texting me right now. We do have to have 24 hours notice. So 11 o'clock will not work. Because it's 12:08. So it'll have to be like
24 hours, not noon tomorrow.
Well, 24 hours from when we get confirmation, right?
A confirmation?
Yeah.
Well, at this point, I still have to poll folks, so we can't say
the meeting's
going to be at 2 if I only have 4 people who can commit at 2.
Okay.
Right?
So 3 or 4?
I say, Norma, you just try to secure the people, and then I also help you secure the people. And then whatever time we hit is the time we hit, which is before Saturday.
Well, we can't call it on Saturday. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. All right. This shall be fine.
Because I want to be mindful of like our attendees.
And keep in mind, I have to have the agenda posted 24 right. hours.
That's what I mean. Yes. So, okay.
Bye, Kathleen. Thank you.
All right.
All right.
We'll get on it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, meeting adjourned.
Everybody.
Bye.